We are ready to go, and we'll take it from there. Ready? Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is an informal hearing on case numbers PU-20-191 and PU-20-219. This is MDU Deferred Accounting, Electric and Gas, related to COVID-19. So I look forward to the conversation ahead, and I don't have any opening comments. I should note that it is 1:32 p.m. on Thursday, July 23rd, 2020, and I am Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. Again, I don't have any opening comments. Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm looking forward to this conversation today and to hearing more from the companies on what you're experiencing, what you've experienced, and just to get a little further down the path on this particular issue. So thanks for making the time and gathering information. Since we are all remote, I don't know if you guys have handouts or we're able to have them all up on screen so we can see, but I'm willing to pull things up on my computer if there's things that need to be sent to us that way. So thank you.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Christman, any opening comments?
Well, I did all the thanks for everyone for joining us and coming in for all the cases. But other than that, no opening comments. Looking forward to the information.
Okay, perfect. The applicant, this is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant does go first in this type of proceeding. But before that, we'll do some quick introductions. Brian Johnson and Victor Shook from the commission, as well as the other two commissioners, as noted, and myself. And from MDU side, can you just... I guess it's always tricky on who goes first, but Garrett, can you take lead and introduce the folks on the call? And I think you're muted.
It's not muted, but
he's here. We're not hearing you. We can hear you, but not clear.
Garrett, if you're having issues with the microphone on your computer, you can try switching to phone audio. There's a settings wheel in the upper right-hand corner. If you click that, there's a computer tab and a phone tab. The phone tab will tell you the call-in number, the access code for the room, and then an audio PIN number to enter.
Garrett is working through that. I can introduce the team if that would work.
Yeah, sounds good.
Excellent. So I'm Carl Leibitz, Assistant General Counsel with MDU Resources. With me is Garrett Singer, Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, Travis Jacobson, Director of Regulatory Affairs, Dan Tipps, our Customer Service, Dan Kimberly, Director of Regulatory Affairs, Art Gilchrist, Vice President of Safety and Process Improvement. And then we have Jessica Anderson, who's our Director of Accounting. So that should be the full team presented virtually.
All right, perfect. Thank you. Well, I'll just turn it over to you whenever you're ready to go. You can provide the information that you have ready.
Excellent. I will kick us off, and then I can go as slow as I need to for Garrett to get settled in. So good afternoon again, commissioners, and thank you for this opportunity to discuss Montana Dakota's application requesting authority for deferred accounting related to the COVID-19 pandemic. The application, as you know, was submitted on April 24th, jointly with Xcel Energy and Otter Tail Power Company. Pause for a second if the slide advanced. Tammy, no. There it is. So in the application, we request to track, defer, and record as a regulatory asset the incremental costs that are associated with the COVID-19 pandemic. The commission established separate cases for each company and MDU Electric was assigned PU 20-191, MDU Gas was assigned PU 20-219. The commission issued a notice and opportunity for hearing on June 10th, 2020. And the issue to be considered in that notice is whether the commission should grant deferred accounting treatment for the financial impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. The deadline to request a hearing was June 11th, 2020, and no comments or requests for a hearing were received. So today, we asked the commission to grant deferred accounting treatment for the financial impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic. And with that, if Garrett is ready, or when he's ready, I'll turn it over to him. So we might pause for a second here.
Stepped away. Must be looking for a headset.
Good afternoon. This is Travis Jacobson, and Garrett is still having some problems, so he's going to try to work through that. And while he does, I'll try to walk through the slides.
Okay, sounds good.
Just a little bit of background in how Montana Dakota started this whole process. We formed internally a workplace pandemic preparedness plan, and we did that in early March. And in addition, we established a pandemic task force to work across all of our brands and try to maintain the safety of customers and employees at the same time. And as you're aware, President Trump on March 13th declared a pandemic on the national level, and at the same time Governor Burgum did at the state level. The utility group suspended non-pay disconnects across all the states, and we started that on March 16th, right after the declarations, and then late payment charges were suspended on the April 1st bills. The pre-screening, we can go back one slide. Could we go back? There we go. Pre-screening is something that our customer experience team is doing, and so if service individuals are going to a home, they're trying to get some preventative measures in place right away before our servicemen get there. We have been making calls to all customers with past due accounts, and we continue to do that, and we implemented a work-from-home policy. And throughout the utility, Garrett, can you mute? I think it might be you. And we have about half of our employees working from home. And then lastly, the protections provided to the field employees, such as our dispatch group, we've implemented a number of procedures to protect all employees, and especially those groups that are very critical in providing electric or gas service. So if we could roll ahead one slide. Just to kind of give an update where we're at as we stand today, we are planning to resume the collections on September 1st, and we are providing notices to the customers. At that time, the past due balances will be subject to a late payment charge, and beginning in September again. Our communications has been in the form of bill inserts, bill messaging. We have it on our social media platforms as well as our website, and we've been doing a lot of outreach to try to make sure that message is out there and customers aren't surprised. I mentioned calls, automated calls are continuing to be made to delinquent customers, and working with customers to provide options and to maintain their service. The messaging will continue again in August, and again, once again, noting the September 1st start date. We, as a company, are working to get a return to work in a phased approach to spread out the individuals as they return to work over time. And our phase one is targeted for October 5th. If you could roll ahead one slide.
Hey, Travis, I'm on the line and I can take over if you would like.
That'd be great, Garrett. I will yield to you.
Thanks, Travis, for kicking it off, and I apologize for not having the audio on my computer. I have dialed into the meeting. What we're going to take a look at on this slide is the overview of impact as it relates to how it impacted Montana Coastal Utilities and the utility group. Certainly, with the hit in the financial markets, we did see what we tried to implement then was a, if you will, a delay where possible in capital projects, as we know the financial markets and the strain it put on obtaining capital. Due to the volatility in the market, we secured an additional borrowing line of about $75 million, and that was at a cost of about $165,000. In addition, we, as Travis had mentioned, we waived late payment revenues. We have seen an increase in our accounts receivable balances, and we'll look at that in just a minute. We did incur additional costs for IT-related costs to have employees working from home remotely. To put it in perspective, as of today, we have approximately about 768 employees that are working remotely from home, of our 1,600 in total workforce. We incurred additional costs for PPE, as well as additional vehicle expense, where we're limiting the number of individuals in a vehicle. Again, these additional incremental costs then were slightly offset by some temporary costs, and the measures we put in place were a delay in filling open positions. We deferred contract services where possible, as well as we had lower travel-related seminars and industry conferences. That's really what there were. All those were canceled or held virtually.
Garrett, a question I have here, maybe you're going to get into this later in more specifics, but will you be going into what you know in terms of the increased cost for IT, PPE, and vehicle expenses in later slides?
At this point, Julie, we don't think that we have, or Commissioner, we don't think we have all those recognized it. There's some coming in, so I wasn't planning to go into detailed costs. Again, the purpose of the docket was back in April when we filed it, not knowing the magnitude, right? So
right.
I think for North Dakota, and maybe Jeff Anderson, who's our director of accounts, she's on the line, and I believe incrementally they're somewhat substantial, and what I plan to share, though, what we know today are the arrears, okay? And that is on the next slide.
Sure. Okay. Do you have any ballpark figures that you or I think you said Jesse might be able to share on that, on some of those other incremental costs?
I mean, it's in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, for North Dakota share in electric and gas. And again, that's at a point in time, and we don't know how it's going to roll forward. You know, we don't know what remains of the pandemic will play out, right?
Okay, thank you.
Right, so then if you look at the arrears, you'll notice that they're substantially in our 60-day to 120-day arrears, and that totals over last year. What we compared it to was 2019 and 2018, try to put it in perspective. If you look at the 30 to 60 days, they're actually lower than those two periods, but if you look at the 60 to 120, that's where we're seeing the impact. And it's up about 33% a year ago, or about $662,000. So those are the buckets, and it's primarily in residential. There's some in commercial as well, but those are the buckets that where we have the higher accounts receivable balances. And, you know, as Travis alluded to in his comments before, we've been calling every customer in arrear to try to encourage them to set up a payment plan or also offering whatever financial that may be available. And we do have Dan Tillis on the line, who's our Director of Customer Service. And Dan, did you want to maybe speak about that a little bit? I know our customer service representative here, or consumer specialist, Kim Blaser, as well as the credit group, has been reaching out to customers.
Yes, definitely. Thanks, Garrett. Trying to turn on my camera here. There it is. I think it's on. Looks like I have to share. All right, I think I'm there now. We have a team in Bismarck of credit and collections reps who, since we suspended collections or disconnects for non-pay and our collections processes, have continued to attempt to call every customer who is 60 days or greater in arrears. And the two sole purposes of those calls are to ensure the customer understands the amount that they are past due, to discuss payment arrangements, which we now allow to be up to 12 months in length, which is about six times longer than they've previously been allowed. Also to discuss financial assistance that may be available to the customer through the energy assistance agencies, and refer the customer to the specific agency that might be able to help them in their area. And our consumer specialist, Kim Glasser, has also been working with customers in for energy assistance as well. Customers also sometimes email us requests for concerns about not being able to pay their balance. Those are referred to our CARES team, which is made up of credit collection specialists who also reach out to those customers to have those same conversations about the options that are available to them to try to either get them current or get them the assistance they need.
So, Dan, can I ask a question? Or Garrett, you can direct me in another direction if it's not for Dan, but what are you hearing from the customers in terms of reasoning when you do actually talk to them or they call in after getting the automated message? What are they saying in terms of why they're not paying? Is it service workers that just haven't had a job, or are people under the impression that they're covered because of a federal mandate or something of that nature?
Yeah, Commissioner, I think what we're hearing most often is that the customer is somehow financially impacted by COVID-19, either reduced hours, reduced tips if they're in the service industry, or complete job loss, and that they're reserving their unemployment benefits or other funds for their most direct needs, which in this case aren't paying the utility bill, since we're not disconnecting for non-pay right now. We do also still hear the typical "I forgot" or "just didn't have money to pay at that time, but I do now." So we are still hearing from customers who are impacted by COVID-19, but we definitely frequently hear of the economic and financial impacts that the pandemic has caused for our customers.
Okay. Are they reacting negatively, thinking this is really unfair at this point in time, or are they generally understanding?
Generally, they understand it and are grateful that we've extended our payment arrangements longer than we normally would allow, as well as that we educate them on the assistance that's available. We've heard that most customers are willing to enter into a payment arrangement. Most aren't asking for up to 12 months. We have very few who are. And we do have some customers who are stating that it may be too early to resume disconnects, but through conversations with our CSRs, they understand our approach and the time we've taken to evaluate and make that decision.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
one more question, if I can, Mr. Dan, and that is, Dan, if people make plans to pay this, do the late payment charges in one, if they come up payment plan, we got to stop charging them interest and late fees?
That is correct, Commissioner. Once a customer enters a payment arrangement or a pay plan, we do not charge interest or late fees.
And then I'd like to add that, you know, when we begin the disconnect process, which collection process starts September 1st, we will go through all the processes required, and the actual disconnect probably wouldn't transpire until like the beginning of the third week of September. So the process kicks off September 1st, and then you go through the notices, the calls, and that process, and then the actual disconnection wouldn't occur then until that approximately the third week of September.
And how far behind do they need to be to quote unquote qualify for disconnect? Is it 120 days or anything over 30?
It's not necessarily a consistent number of days. Our collections process will start for the customer when they are a set amount and set number of days in arrears, typically $50 or 35 days. And then we have a risk report that we work, our credit collections team works off of, where based on the customer's tenure with the company, their payment history, the amount of the most recent payment, a lot of those factors, customers show up with a certain risk level, and we work that from the highest priority down to the lowest risk. And it's a manual process to issue a disconnect order to our field team. And so every account is manually reviewed by a credit collections rep, and that credit collections rep makes multiple outbound call attempts to the customer before they would send out a disconnect order to the field. So we go through a lot of steps of automated calling, disconnect notices, final notices, and then those manual review and outbound calls for our credit collections team before we ever send out a disconnect order. And so typically customers are going to be at least 60 days past due before we would send out a disconnect. But it does depend on the customer. If they've been on a report because of all those factors every month, and then maybe it could be earlier than that because their payment history is so negative.
Okay, very good. And so if I'm adding up all the blue cons, it looks like you're about $2 million behind on custom on residential arrears. But I had a chance to add that up. How that compares to previous years, like in total.
Right. For residential, it's almost $2 million in total past due. And that compares to like $1.8 million in 2019 for residential.
So 2.5 versus 1.8, so 0.7. Mm. All right, so 700,000 more.
Correct.
Okay. I guess I would have expected it to be even higher, but are you guys?
Initially not higher too. It varies across our 8 states and our 4 different brands, right, for the utility group. But what we've seen in the last month is that gap has come down. So I think it was over 50%. Now it's like 33%. Mm-hmm. So it has come down within, you know, the last month. But what it shows is that you have these 60 days going out, and that's the concerning part, right? So from that amount, we don't know exactly what amount will be written off, and it's just too early to tell that as we work through the process. You know, will the net write-offs be in line with, you know, what we've experienced in the past, or will they be higher? We're assuming they're going to be higher as a result of that.
Garrett, I'm sorry, Julie, are you done?
I am. Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. Garrett, as long as we're back on this slide, can you tell me, so you've got a $662,000 difference broken out by the different columns, the different days, you know, aged out. What percentages do you use in terms of bad debt reserve? Do you do something like that where at 31 to 60 days you reserve 3%, or 61 to 90 you bump that up, et cetera, or don't you put that system in place?
You know, in terms of what's recorded, there it's a calculation and it's based on history and it rolls forward. And, you know, if you bring in the collections and you write them out a certain amount off, and whatever those averages are is really what's recorded. I know that, you know, Jess is on the line. Jessica Anderson, our director of accounting. Jess, do you have any more details from a GAAP perspective how we record the net reserve?
Sure. Hi, I'm Jessica Anderson, the director of finance for Montana Dakota. Yes, we do have, when we estimate our uncollectible accounts, we have a factor based on 5 years of history for each bucket. So the 31 to 60 day bucket would have a smaller percentage applied to it, where the 90 plus would have a higher percentage to it. So yes, when we estimate our uncollectible accounts, we do apply a different factor to each bucket, the 30, 60, 90, and over 90.
Okay, thank you.
This is Randy. I want to throw one more question in. We're talking about the dollar amount of arrearages. What percentage of your residential customers are in arrears, and what would the normal have been in the last 2 years?
I think I'll defer to Dan on that question.
And Dan, I'm not sure you have that. What we certainly can provide that, Commissioner, that data, if you don't have that readily available.
Yep, that'd be fine. Thanks.
One other item I wanted to point out is when we're on the agenda, receivable balances, is that when you reinstate the late payment fees, it'll be on a go-forward basis, so there'll be no back, just so that everyone's clear, there will be no back charging, just whatever that balance is going forward, September and forward. And one other item I was going to mention that I had in my point, of course, Travis didn't have a copy of that, was that, you know, across our utility group, again, this is 1,600 employees and 8 states, we have, you know, I believe we have a total positive case or testing of about 10 employees, 2 of which were in North Dakota, just with that respect across our utility group. And again, in summary, what we're requesting here is just the authority to defer the pandemic-related costs, not knowing where these unprecedented times may take us and what yet lies ahead. And then any cost recovery of such will be addressed in rate cases down the road. Again, should these costs be a magnitude to which they're significant to the company, then we just want the authority to defer them to a later time. And at this point, we haven't deferred these costs, but we're just, should they continue to be a material, we just want the authority then to defer them.
Victor, questions?
I don't have any questions. I appreciate the slides. That helped kind of clear up a few things. A couple of things for me. So I had a data request I had submitted to MDU about a month or so ago here. They've come back, and there's nothing major in here that concerns me, but I just like to have those put into the record. I've sent copies to the commissioners. There's some items that kind of concern me over the long term, but I agree with how Garrett's putting this. This is simply the requesting the authority to defer the costs. It does not assure them recovery of any amount or type of cost. It's something we can certainly and most likely will argue about in the future. Some of the revenue-related items in particular concern me, but something I would like to ensure that we're tracking is I understand, you know, they certainly have some increased costs in some areas, but they definitely would have some decreased costs in other areas. So I think it's important that we're tracking both of those situations. And additionally, If when we're talking about revenues, you know, certainly they're going to have some reduced revenues for late payment fees and sales in general, but also there could be increased revenues in some other areas. You know, I think some of the utilities were seeing a decrease in load and usage from commercial accounts, but an increase maybe to a smaller degree in residential. So I just want to make sure that we're tracking all of the sides of this, not just the negative pieces that that impact MDU, the positive ones as well.
Right. And along those lines, the one thing that I think every business in America is you're experiencing, organizations are experiencing increased costs in some areas, and this is very similar. Maybe this is the same, but I think there will also be long-term efficiencies gained in some areas just by changing how business is conducted, and I think that's a distinct possibility as well. So that's just a heads up on a question I'll be asking in terms of, you know, lessons learned. You know, you were less efficient this way, but how did you hopefully pick up a few efficiencies in other areas as well, and we'll see where that goes. Brian, did you have any questions?
No.
Commissioner Chrisman, did you have any?
No, I do not, thanks.
Yep, and Commissioner Fedorchuk, I know you were asking questions. Do you have anything else?
It's kind of a general question to the company. If you could help us put into context the uncertainty that this pandemic has created for your business, and in particular the financial uncertainty, as it compares to just, you know, the uncertainty that is inherent to your kind of business. Help me better understand how challenging this has been, especially in terms of the financial pieces.
I think the challenge has been in not knowing, you know, where it goes, right? In North Dakota, certainly it's impacted, you know, Western North Dakota dramatically. So as was earlier mentioned, we have seen large reductions in our larger loads, our commercial volumes, restaurants, hotels, probably schools to some degree. That was somewhat offset then by higher sales to residential, but really that not knowing where our volumes will be in the future, I think, is a major exposure. Not knowing where capital markets will be, you know, in terms of still investing, doing the capital replacement work that we need to do, so that that would be a concern. And certainly we've seen a change in today. Our entire customer service team is working remotely with the exception of maybe, you know, 15 employees. So it's the change in the workplace, not knowing where that will lead as well. So really the economy in general, I think, as it relates, you know, to our business, really is the unknown. And just, I think, too early to really know what those full impacts will be. You know, the utility group operates across 8 states, 4 different brands, and, you know, there's differences between states. Some states continue to be locked down, where others in North Dakota have opened up. So it's just that disparity maybe between the regions, and I'm trying to put in place policy and procedures that really specific maybe to certain regions as well. So those are some of the challenges, I think, really, as we move forward.
Mm-hmm. And is it, how did you go about getting your customer service folks all remote? Did it mostly involve completely buying like equipment and all this new stuff, or do you take from their existing offices? Help me understand how much of an IT challenge has been for you guys.
It has been an IT challenge. Really, a lot of it was on the shoulders of our IT group, and they performed remarkably. You know, we maybe have like slightly under 200 in our total customer experience team. So of those 760 whatever employees that are working remotely today, you know, almost 200 of those are our customer service team. And I would like to end maybe talk about some of the IT challenges. You know, certainly we did roll into some of those challenges. We were able to overcome them. A lot of dedication of our entire group. But then maybe you can talk about what some of those were.
Yeah, thanks, Garrett. It definitely was a big challenge. On March 16th, when we made the decision to try to move as many of our customer service employees into a work-from-home environment as possible, we didn't have any customer service employees working remotely at the time. And so the just under 200 employees Garrett is speaking about were all working from either our Bismarck or Meridian, Idaho offices. And our IT and telecom teams did a tremendous job acquiring equipment, some of which we already had in our company inventory, some we had to acquire on the market, which was challenging because a lot of other companies were trying to do the same at the very same time. And they were able to acquire that equipment. And over the course of about 2 weeks, we moved all but about 10 to 15 of those employees into a work-from-home environment. We did deploy some of the equipment that was in our customer service facilities, for example, in Bismarck, for our roughly 30 customer service employees there. We moved all of their existing desktops into their homes. But in Meridian, we use a different technology, and we don't have actual desktops for most of our employees there. And so we had to send them over laptops that we either had in our inventory or acquired on the market. As many monitors as we could get to connect to those laptops, depending on the adapters we had, and sent them home. And we've swapped some equipment out since then as we've stayed in this environment longer than we expected to. But yeah, it was very challenging. We really learned on the fly, adjusted on the fly, but our teams, our IT and telecom teams did a terrific job. Our customer experience team, leadership team did an awesome job too.
Thank you. And you might have said this earlier, but are your calls up too? Like, are people getting a lot more volume calls from customers?
At the very beginning, our call volume actually dropped about 30%. And that was driven significantly by the lack of the collections process. And so not making those automated calls to remind customers they're past due, not sending out disconnect notices. Those drive a lot of response from customers because that threat of disconnect prompts action. And so without that, we definitely saw our call volume decrease. We've seen it come back to about within about 5% of normal 2019 volume for this time of year. And so, you know, through our manual outbound calls and customers, I believe, starting to financially recover, we've definitely seen the volume come back up. It's not quite back to what 2019 volume was just yet.
Okay. Let's see here. Do you have any more to add in terms of the, you said you kind of slowed up some of the projects or you've reduced work on some of your capital expenditures. Garrett, can you just give a quick like overview on what some of those projects are that you sort of put on hold? And how long you can do that?
Right. Any projects that, and again, that the amount isn't, you know, any projects that have the ability to be delayed, we put some of that in place. If we're looking at some of the, you know, type of work that we had temporarily put a hold on, that was like some of maybe the meter audits, that type of thing, or the you know, that type of work, contract work, was basically those that could be delayed, but now most of that work has resumed. As it relates to North Dakota, the operations are pretty much back to normal, but we put in place then all the CDC recommended procedures when we enter customers' homes and things like that. But in terms of the services providing, most of that work is now back to normal or resumed where it was before.
Okay.
Garrett, the meter audits, that's actually something that's required by, I think it may even be in law, for certain, at a minimum it's in our rules. So is that something you may be Are you still within compliance of that?
Maybe I misspoke there. Not meter audits, was maybe just the a contract service for. Let me see if I can where I have it here. I mean, we'll all that work will be completed by year end.
Okay.
In terms of what's required for compliance, so from that perspective. That won't be an issue
there. Great. Thanks.
And then one more question. Are there any government programs that you guys are able to take advantage of or have to apply for or qualify for? I haven't watched that closely.
Not from a company perspective, really in terms of what our employee colleagues have been too high to take advantage of any type of company benefits or such as that, but certainly some of the CARES dollars, Dan, from a customer perspective, did you want to talk about that a little bit as well, Julie, or are you just talking about if the company received any sort of government benefits?
Anything that might help offset some of the impact you're seeing, I guess, if you view some of the CARES dollars as doing that, that'd be great.
Okay.
I mean, some of the company impacts, I should say.
Right. So Dan, maybe you can talk, in terms of what the customer can apply for, it's not what the company would receive back. If, all those benefits then would have to come from, or the customer would have to apply for that those financial benefits, and then could pay their utility bill.
All right.
Correct. So the state of North Dakota received additional funding from the CARES Act, specifically for energy assistance, as did each state. I'm actually pulling up my file here that tells me exactly how much that was. Give me 1 second. Let's see, North Dakota received an additional $6.8 million in CARES Act funding. The regular LIHEAP program remained unchanged for North Dakota. And really, it looks like the state has not made any changes to their program. And so customers are able to get to apply for assistance as they have been in the past. There's just more additional funds available that were provided from the CARES Act to help customers with more funding or to help more customers.
Very good. Thank you. I don't think I have any other questions.
And just to follow up for Victor, what I meant to show was that it was the service point audits, the type of, those were the contract services that we had delayed and had not resumed, so it was the service point audits.
Okay.
In regards to that.
Great. Thanks, Garrett.
Another thing I'd like to mention is that we're in a pre-phase, if you will, of returning to the workplace. So we're, as was shown in the slide, we're targeting October 5th as a phase one, but today we're in a phase of those employees who, just aren't comfortable working from home, or if they can better function in the office, we're allowing some of those to come into the office, putting in new protocol, if you will, in terms of how you enter, exit the building, and all those things in regard. Moving forward.
Mr. Chairman, this is Randy. An additional question did arise from the previous discussion.
Okay.
I don't remember which all companies we allowed estimating meter readings that need to be done from within home. If MDU was one of them, has that been ended and that you're reading them in the people's homes again? And if so, what's their reaction to having a meter reader show up in their house?
It's my understanding that most of those are electronic, so that shouldn't have been, issues. Those should have been few and far between, but Tammy, do you have any, or Jess, any additional information in regards to meter reading. Most of those, again, come off of our automatic system.
Garrett, this is Tammy Eberling, Commissioner. That's correct. And if not off the network, then we're using the drive-by method, so we can access that read from a vehicle. So we did not ask for a waiver of that.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Let's see, we're just about getting to the end of the time slot, so we can be on time for the next one. Brian, did you have any questions?
I do not, no.
Okay. Victor, anything else you'd like to ask?
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. My fellow commissioners, going once, twice. Okay, you can tell there's a delay, because at first it's like, okay, maybe that wasn't even remotely humorous, but then you get the reaction. It's like, okay. Garrett, anything else you'd like to add to close things out?
No, just again, thank you, Travis, for kicking it off for us. Sorry that for whatever reason, my brought the notebook in from home, so working from home today into the office to set it up, and the technology didn't work, but we had to call in. And again, the docket here in front of us is just to have the ability to defer these costs should they be significant. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you as well to everyone being on the call today and for dialing in as conferencing in as necessary. It's just something that we're dealing with these days, but it's nice that we can effectively have these meetings regardless. So did we get a handout, Victor? You had wanted to admit the handouts. Is that correct?
Yep.
And how many do we have?
Yes, there's one for each case. There was the exact same data requests I sent to all of the companies on this. I think there were seven of them for each case. So I will have John get those in the docket.
Okay. So then the data request as well as the slideshow presentation that MDU provided will now become a part of the record and will be considered evidence. Are there any objections to this evidence becoming a part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached, as well as the audio recording of today's call? From MDU, any objections?
No objections.
Okay, thank you. Staff, any objections?
No objection from staff.
Okay. Then those components will now be considered evidence and will be used for the final decision on this particular case. Is there anything else that anyone would like to add at this point in time? Okay, sensing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you very much, everyone.